We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 282. We are sitting here Sunday evening before the World Series game is going to start. And I promise we're not going to talk too much about the World Series because, frankly, I can't stomach it. I don't know about you, Scott. But we are maybe 5, 6, or if this World Series is any indicator, 9 hours away from just my worst nightmare.
Yeah, it's the one that you could see coming from a mile away after game one. I mean, I think a lot of people thought it was a done deal before the series even started. I thought the Dodgers had a chance, and they did honestly have some chances, and they just didn't take advantage of opportunity so far. But, you know, whether it's a done deal when you guys are listening to this at this Monday morning or not, it feels like it is at this point, because last night, if they were to win after that Puig home run, that would have been a game that they absolutely should have won, and they did not. And
they had to win badly. That game.
Yes.
You win the longest game in World Series history, you burn the Red Sox game four starter, Eovaldi. You have all the momentum going into game four to tie it, and they were 2+ innings away from tying it. It would have been, that was it. That was the chance. Once the Red Sox came back, I woke up to an MLB, of course, Steve Pierce, but an MLB alert that Chris Sale's motivation speech in the dugout turned the Red Sox series around. I'm like, God damn it, it's 8:45 in the morning and I already want to puke all over myself.
Yeah, it's annoying. You know, I got Steve Pierce crying in the post game, you know, like tearing up in the post game interview on the side with whoever it was doing the interview. But I'm like, dude, like talking about the fact that he grew up a Red Sox, it really makes me want to vomit. The fact that it's Steve Pierce, it's driving me nuts. I hate
coupled that with the fact he's a Yankees killer, hit them all season.
I just want it to be over.
Right? Because like you said, it's been inevitable for some time now. And after the Red Sox lost, after the Yankees lost to the Red Sox in the ALDS, like I guess it can get worse. The Red Sox can win the World Series and that's worse. But the Yankee season ending at the hands of the Red Sox, like that's an all-time low. That's rock bottom. So fine. Just add the cherry on top of the shit pie.
I guess. But them winning the World Series is worse than getting knocked out by them. Getting knocked out by them and then winning the World Series is way worse. Because if they didn't win the World Series, then it's like, okay, they beat them, they knocked them out, but you know, this team probably wasn't going to go that deep. It's just the feeling that I think a lot of people had, and they couldn't finish it either. Like Houston was supposed to fix that, and they didn't. They laid a giant egg.
Houston would have been the team that I think every Yankees fan would have been fine winning again.
Yeah,
they won last year. They were the defending champs. They looked like they steamrolled Cleveland, and it was going to be a cakewalk for them. And it all just changed. Red Sox have gotten all the breaks, and I've been really annoyed by this year in the playoffs. I don't know if you have this feeling too. We always say that it's just about who's playing hottest at the time. That's the team that usually wins. But the more I watch these playoff games, I really think it's the team that makes the least amount of mistakes.
Well, yeah, I guess,
the team and the coaching staff that does not make that doesn't make the dumb moves, errors, pitching changes.
Well, it's also
whatever
the ones,
it may be.
But yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, that's the one that doesn't make mistakes. But that's really hard to rely on and say that, because it's kind of Monday morning quarterbacking it. Because the pitching matchups, if you're making a pitching change, like you don't know if it's a mistake. It doesn't really need to be a mistake. It just the guy just not pitching well at that
depends
time.
Who you talk to
it depends on the situation. Yeah for sure, there's no doubt about it. But the thing about this particular postseason, it's like you know, Cora's got just a golden nugget up his ass because everything he does works. It's crazy. Even things that shouldn't work, you know,
and like using Eovaldi for 6 innings going for broke when you're already up 2-0 in the series. That shouldn't work. That shouldn't be what you do.
And
he did it and it worked out.
He's doing kind of what Well, not really. He's doing kind of what Houston started doing last year. Houston started using a lot of their starting pitchers as relievers. But what he's doing is...
That was by necessity because they didn't have anybody.
And you know, there's a similar situation here, even though the guys who are coming out of their bullpen really aren't pitching badly. They're pitching pretty damn well. But he's using guys that are supposed to start games also. Like that, Houston didn't do that. They just had a bunch of guys and leftovers that they threw in the bullpen. But... you know, Cora's using guys that are supposed to throw the next day or the day after that. And he's just like, whatever, and just throwing them at key situations and then figuring out a starter the next time. It's pretty crazy. I haven't really seen much like that. So there's a bit of me like wanting to tip my cap to him because I think he's doing some really creative things that are very interesting, but it's nauseating at the same time.
And on the flip side, you get... watching Kenley Jansen come in for a second time in a row, blowing it, just made me appreciate Mariano Rivera so much more. Just the luxury that we had for the entire 90s run, just not to worry about it. I know Mariano had a couple mistakes in the playoffs, but Jansen is supposed to be one of the best closers in baseball. He got a huge, massive contract before last season, and he had two opportunities in Game 3 and Game 4 to come in and shut the door, and he couldn't do it either time. Mm-hmm. Against Jackie Bradley Jr. and against Steve Pierce. Like, those aren't even the Red Sox good hitters.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely had the opportunity to come in and close the deal, and just the long ball's killing the guy. He's got that quote Mariano cutter, even though it's not remotely close to it, obviously. But you know, it's just it makes you do appreciate how good he was for such a long stretch too. I mean, like the guy was invincible for a very long time. How old was he? 40 plus. What was his last year? He was over 40, was he not?
Who are you talking about? Mariano?
Yeah.
Was he 40, yeah, wasn't he 42? 42 in his last season?
I think he was.
42, number 42. He was 43 in 2013.
There you go. So, you know, the guy was, he swam in the Tuck Everlasting Pond. The Fountain of Youth. So he got it.
What was Tuck Everlasting? Was that a book?
It was a book, yeah. Tuck Everlasting was the guy who had like a fountain, a lake of youth or a fountain of youth or something.
Any other thoughts about the World Series? Apparently the ratings are down. No one's watching this thing.
Oh, so the moves, like we were talking about this beforehand. We were talking about the sabermetrics and all these Dave Roberts moves that he's been making because he's been getting killed with especially last night when you look at what he did with Rich Hill, taking him out, bringing in another lefty after Hill was pitching very well and it just didn't work, and then for whatever reason he just keeps bringing in freaking Ryan Madsen, who's done nothing but serve up on a platter home run balls at big situations every single time he's come in. But the thing that's killing me is like some of these sabermetrics guys on Twitter are just like this. There's a reason why people don't like the numbers and these numbers guys, because they come up with these reasonings why you know, the moves that didn't work were correct.
Right. That's
they'll
the
never,
thing.
Never say die. Always go down saying the move was right because the numbers said so.
They're
I don't
like
give
the
a rat's ass what your eyes say.
They're like the captain of the Titanic. They're going to go down with the ship, even though you just slammed into an iceberg and it was clearly the wrong decision. Nope. The metrics said it was the right decision. I don't care what just happened on the field.
Yeah. He obviously had a bad day, but you know, talking about like, the fact that there's an asinine argument out there that you should go with Rich Hill because his stuff looks good on that given day. And like, that's, you're watching him deal and you should keep him in because he's dealing. No. Apparently that's an asinine argument. You don't do that, because if you do that, then that's how you lose games. You're just going with a guy until he fails and lets up all runs. Why wouldn't you take him out before that? Because everybody can predict the exact moment when the guy's going to implode. It's like trying to, you know, when you're in the stock market, trying to catch the bottom or catch the top. It's not easy to do. It's not like it's the most telling signs out there, but you have to look at the indications that you have, how the guys are doing, your eyeballs and how he's throwing and the at-bats that they're having, and then make a move. Like, to me, I don't understand why he took him out and also brought in another lefty. It wasn't like it was a righty lefty thing. It was just, I don't want this guy. I want this guy because the numbers.
Do you think there's somebody above Dave Roberts making the calls? Like we've been talking about with Aaron Boone.
I have not been saying that about Aaron Boone. I don't think anybody's doing that, especially in game for sure. But no, it's, you know, Roberts did this last year too. he's so freaking reliant upon these numbers.
Especially look at the games at Fenway Park, games 1 and 2. He didn't play. He didn't start Muncy or Peterson because lefties were on the mound. And there's no way you can't make an argument that those are better players, regardless of the lefty righty matchup, than I don't even remember. I don't even know who he put in over them. But yeah. I don't think either of those two guys started either of those games.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things just make you cringe, or at least make me cringe. Like, I really do see and appreciate sabermetrics. I have really a newfound appreciation for them since we've done this podcast, and I've been exposed to them more often than I ever have been. And there's no doubt they serve a very, very important role in baseball now and into the future. But my God, there are certain times in this game you have to look and feel and see and just know in your bones the right move, whether the numbers say so or not. There are certain situations. And to me, when you're in a playoff, in a World Series situation, you know, you have the most pressure ever in the world on you know, each player at that point. You're not going to find numbers that are going to tell you how that guy's going to react in a given situation. I'm sorry. You're just not going to find those numbers. And if you're going on, if you're looking, relying on numbers that are over a span of time and say, you know, this is the move, the percentages are with you. I'm sorry, but over a course of a season, I can understand that. But when you're in the heat of a moment of a World Series game and you see something that's going against it, you either use your judgment based on what you're looking at, or you just go by the numbers and don't have a mind at all. And I got problems with that.
I think in an ideal world, you'd have a manager and an analytics department and a GM and all that stuff that can blend both, right? But then you get this gray area. And sabermetricians, metrics nerds, don't like that. They don't like gray area. They like black and white.
And this is why they drive people insane. This is why people don't like them.
So it you're never going to satisfy a person who is a sabermetrician, whatever they are, because they are always going to say the data will win.
Right.
But I rather have somebody in my dugout, in my front office, that understands all of the metrics, that can consume them and do whatever they want with them, but then also can apply them in the appropriate manner, whether he is watching what's happening on the field, knows a player's history, can relate to players, all that stuff, can blend all that stuff, put it all into a pile, right?
Yes.
That's the hard part. There's no metric for that big pile in the middle. You just have to understand it. You just have to be there every day.
Because otherwise, what is the point of having a guy making those decisions? You could have a robot. You could have a sabermetrician.
You could have a computer. You could. It doesn't matter. Literally be Siri. You could have Siri on your iPhone managing the game.
Pitching change. Yep. Siri will. Yeah. Exactly. Siri will ping the umpire, and a pitching change will happen.
Hey Siri, bring in the lefty to face the lefty. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's crazy. But you know, it's just when you're looking at the data, and I understand over a period of time the data will win. It's hard to dispute that because it's there and it's hard. It's evidence. But when you're in a moment. And there's, it's just, it's different. The World Series, the playoffs, it's just a different moment, you know? And to me, there's nothing that can gauge that, that particular moment in numbers. You have to use those numbers to what you're like, exactly what you were saying. You have to use them to make your best decision, but you also have to feel this game out. And in my opinion, Roberts just did not feel, he made a decision based off the numbers, based off of what his reports had said, and that was it. Like, it was predetermined.
So, and I think that's why we criticized Boone so heavily in those last two ALDS games, is because he was not watching what was happening on the field as he was watching Luis Severino give up 110-mile-an-hour missiles all over the field.
Yeah, he was going the opposite way. He's leaving guys in too long.
Right, and trusting Sabathia to get through a gauntlet of right-handed hitters when he should not have. So... Yeah. We may have criticized Boone all season for making the metrics move, and then in the end he didn't do it.
Well, you know, he was trying to steal some stuff. Boone went the other way. I think like he was trying, he got a little greedy in certain situations. You know, we're talking about the Severino and Sabathia when he tried to get a couple outs at the bottom of the lineup, and it backfired massively. And for whatever reason, he just kept letting them you know, fail over
everything.
And over
it's
again.
Like that gif when the dog is sitting in the middle of the burning room. Everything is fine here. Don't
it's
look,
fine. Yeah, yeah.
Don't look at that, don't what look just at the happened, bases loaded right now.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, that doesn't matter. It's fine. It's the bottom of the order. No problem. Right. We're going to turn this lineup over, and then I'm going to bring my guy in. but yeah, that's my big gripe, I guess, with the sabermetrics is the big moments like this. You can't wholly rely on them. You just can't.
That kind of segues into some MLB news where Brody Van Wagenen is the new Mets GM. That's been reported. He is an agent. He was the agent for DeGrom. I think he was Robbie Cano's agent, some other big name players. So he's switching teams. He's going to the management side of the business. That's somebody who is going to have to figure out the analytics as well as the how much money do I give player X, player Y, player Z.
Yeah, he's going from the other side where he's trying to get as much money as possible. Now he's trying to, you know, talk down or fit everything into a budget, which especially being the Mets GM, he's going to have to do that. hopefully the money is there when he does offer those contracts. But, you know, he's got a very different situation. It's unique. I think it's interesting to see that an agent does flip and go the other side and now is going to be in charge of constructing the players on a team when this guy was really trying to get as much dollar and you know, everything he was doing was in the best interest of his client, the player, and now it's reversed.
Clearly, this is something he wanted to do. It's a career move. He wanted to be a GM versus be an agent, and that's fine. Like, I think that anybody can respect that. But I was listening to the Michael Kay Show this week, and they had Scott Boras on, and Scott Boras was pretty clear cut about this Brody Van Wagenen basically betraying his clients. This is a complete betrayal of their trust, and he kind of shunned him for this move.
Well, he's going to shun him because it's going to be a very difficult negotiation. He knows all the tricks. He's the guy that's been doing it.
He has inside information. One of his biggest players is DeGrom, and he's on that team. And 6 months ago, we were talking about if the Mets are going to either trade or extend Jacob DeGrom. Van Wagenen was out there campaigning for a 6-7 year deal for DeGrom. And now what's he going to do? Is he going to put up or shut up?
It's going to be very interesting.
It's fascinating,
I don't know if this helps them or really hurts them.
The Mets? It's the Mets. It'll hurt them.
But I'm saying, as far as negotiations, like obviously he knows what DeGrom wants. So
but
now
it's
he's
still up
to
the owners.
Fits.
The owners still have to write the checks. So
yeah, he's got to see if it fits in the trick.
Van Wagenen can say, I want to give Jacob DeGrom $150 million, and it's still up to the Wilpons to say yes or no. So
right. Yeah, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm glad the Mets did this. It'd be like a nice, fun experiment.
It's a nice experience. Let them be the guinea pigs and not somebody else. speaking of just ridiculous money, Bryce Harper bidding will apparently start at $350 million. 10 years, 35 mil per year, which is kind of what we said a couple years ago for Harper and Machado. I expect Machado to be right in the same category because they're the same age. They are still only 26 years old. That boggles the mind because I feel like both have been around forever. $35 million a year for 10 years is, I think teams will give them that. I think that will happen, whether it's the Yankees to Machado or to Harper or somebody else. I think both or at least one will get that contract.
I don't know. It's if you remember, the early rumors were 10 years, $500 million. It was something
But that was after... That wasn't recent, though. That was kind of like... Harper's MVP year?
Yeah.
People were like, all right, let's get stupid.
He was definitely on a high at that point. But yeah, it was ridiculous. The 10 years, 350. I mean, they're going to go in there, obviously asking for the moon, and they'll see where people are. And he'll probably get something close to that. I really hope the Yankees don't do it. I really hope the Yankees don't go in with a 10-year deal. Like I was talking about a couple people on Twitter. I'm like, I don't want this guy. This is the, you know, I was, God forbid I put out a batting average for a postseason stat.
Batting average?
Honestly, I saw it and I was like, ooh, this is a terrible number. Let me tweet this out. But the, you know, to me, it's just too rich for what you're getting at that point. When you're looking at like a 10-year, $350 million contract, you got to be, if he's got to be the guy, right? Like to me, he's got to be the guy. And there's got to be other ways that they're going to be making up a lot more of that money too. To like him coming to New York is, I mean, it would be a big deal, no doubt about it, but there's, it's not his team. It's Aaron Judge's team. So I that's the other sticking point to me. And Stanton's here for 10 years. So there's already guys here that are established. There's control of the team, you know, within the clubhouse. So he'd be kind of like coming in to join the party. And I don't know if that's what he wants. I feel like he wants to be the guy. And he would not be that in New York.
But think about the teams that would be willing to pay him that.
Yeah.
The Cubs, the Red Sox, the Dodgers. I don't even know if there's any other teams. Is it would Harper be the man on any of those teams? No.
Yeah, I mean, it would LA, I think he could get close. I think he definitely could. I mean, Bellinger would be the other guy, but Bellinger,
Seager will be back next year, and Seager was, I think, going to be the guy.
Yeah, but I don't think he's not to that level, you know. He's not Bellinger, we thought after maybe the rookie of the year stint, but
yeah, and
he's a nice player, but he's definitely not like, he's not a Bryce Harper type guy. I feel like Harper could walk into that clubhouse and run that show.
But Turner is kind of like their emotional leader. He's not their best player, but he's,
Turner's not like he's not like, the team is his though. He's definitely one of those guys that I see what you're saying as far as like an emotional, like,
yeah,
he's the guts of the team, but he's not like the marketable guy for the team.
And you can't really call it a starting pitcher, right? Not, you can't give it to Kershaw, because can a starting pitcher be the team leader? Can he be?
I think Kershaw probably is at this point. He's probably the most marketed guy out there, I would say at this point. Okay. Puig's got like both, you know, Jekyll and Hyde. So I feel like there's a,
I'd like to get into the minds of Dodgers kind of fans. I feel like he's a very polarizing figure for Dodgers
Puig
fans. You either love him or hate him. Yeah. Puig.
Yeah. Because there was some time where he was terrible and it seemed like it was, because
he was dogging it on some plays. And when
it's like, he's not happy. If Puig's not happy, Puig won't play. You know, it's like the guy's got to be,
but then he flashes the talent and you're like, oh shit, I forgot. Yeah, Puig's pretty good.
There's Bo Jackson inside him somewhere, you know, like he's a freak of an athlete.
Right.
But he does some really dumb shit too. I feel like LA could be a good place for him to go,
but
in there.
But Chicago's kind of not. That's Bryant's team or Javi Baez's team or I don't
see Chicago getting him. Yeah, no, I agree. I think LA is the.
So then
the
what team's going to give him 10 years? I mean, what other team out there is going to be willing to do that?
That's my thing. I think it's going to be a little more difficult than I think you think. If I'm him, what I would do is I would go for a 5-year contract and go for something stupid. Like the fact that he's asking for $35 million a year for 10 years. I don't see that AAV happening. I don't see anybody's going to give him that much money for that long. But I do believe he could get $35 to $40 million if he went for like a 5-year contract.
So
and then
the
he's 31
LeBron
years
approach.
Old. Do it all over again. Yeah.
Take the LeBron approach, get, just pick where you're going to go every 3 years, be the mercenary, but it's so different in baseball.
Well, yeah, but this would be a 5-year deal, and then at 31, you go for the jugular at that point, because at 30, Joey Votto got a 10-year deal. He might have been 31. He was 31 at that point. Got a 10-year deal
Cano
from the Reds.
Too.
Yeah, and Cano. So there's a precedent of
A-Rod.
Guys getting 10-year deals
got it too.
In your early 30s. And a guy like Bryce Harper, you know, God forbid any injury, it's a gamble because you have to stay healthy, but he could make a ton more money if he did that.
Yeah,
so it would be it'd be interesting if I'm.
Unless, do you think it's important to him to have the richest contract of all time?
Maybe he seems like he's that kind of guy.
Well, that's something that that strikes me as something Scott Boras would feed into his head. Like that's on the first PowerPoint slide of the presentation in Scott Boras's offices when Bryce Harper's sitting there. Is you're going to be the richest Major League Baseball player of all time?
Yeah,
I guarantee you that's how he sold A-Rod. A-Rod, just, you can manipulate the fuck out of his mind.
if you do a 5-year deal though at like $35 to $40 million, like that to me is probably a lot more doable from especially the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers of the world, Cubs of the world, because of the contract and like the money doesn't really matter as much at that point. But you know, Boris is still going to get paid a shit ton of money on that contract. And
well, let's not worry about Scott Boris's dollars and cents.
My point is that Boris, you know, I think could be okay with a deal like that because he's actually going to get his money sooner. Like he would be getting, you know, a good chunk of that change.
How does that work though? Does it just get a percentage up front of the total contract or is it a yearly thing for agents?
I think it's around 2% is my understanding, and there's a guaranteed check, right? So guaranteed money comes to you, and I believe depending on how the contract is, that's a sum, 2% of that check, and then when the checks are cut, I think it's a 2% fee each time. So I do believe it goes with the contract.
So it goes with the contract. I guess that gives incentive to the agent to stay with the player to do any sort of marketing for them or whatever right. they're going to do, because otherwise you sign a guy to a 10-year deal and then you just dump him.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, because that would happen probably more often too.
Okay, so
it goes the other way too. I mean, like the fact that if you're not doing well and you're not getting, you know, I don't know how it's worked with a contract with a player if he dumps his agent in the middle of a deal, but he's the guy who negotiated that contract. I'm not sure how that works. If you guys are listening and you know more about these contract stuff, let us know. I'd be more interested.
So if you have not been able to tell so far, we are talking out of our ass.
A little bit.
So you played GM last week. We both played GM last week. We each said no to Machado and Harper.
Yep.
Would you say yes to a 5-year, $35 or $40 million contract for either of those players?
I would definitely consider that. Yeah. I would consider
so the years if it was, are if it more of an issue year. For you than yes. the money.
Oh, 1,000%. Definitely.
You don't want to be.
I don't want to get stuck.
But you're only stuck with the player. Usually when you sign a guy for 10 years, you're basically signing up to him until he's 39 or 40. For Harper Machado, you're only signing up for him until 36, which in theory should still be in their good years.
Well, you know, technically when we're talking about those contracts that were aging, that are like 39, 40, like that was in a time when they were taking some extra things to get them going. Like 35 to 36 seems about right to start hitting your end. Like there's not a ton of guys that are like extremely productive, you know, well after 36. I don't know. It's
well, we already have 36. One of those guys on the team that Stanton, who's 28 this year. He's going to be 38. When that contract expires.
Yeah, and the last 2 to 3 years of that contract are going to be ugly.
Depending on who you talk to, you might think it's ugly already.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there hating Stan.
Oh, God, like, Stan. Like,
insanely hating him.
Amount of arguments I get in about Stan, because I'll tweet something negative about Stanton and people will automatically think I say he sucks, and that's not what I'm saying. But then someone will come at me and be like, oh, he was statistically our best player, and that's just false. Just because right. he had the most home runs and RBIs does not make him the best player on the team.
No, he definitely went through spurts as well. He was very streaky. But you know, look, you're gonna the end of a 10-year deal like that. It's not gonna be great. But for these guys, 10 years is a long time. So there's so many things that can happen within a 10-year span, and that's the other problem. Like if there's an injury, these are all guaranteed contracts, so it doesn't matter. I mean, look what happened with freaking Ellsbury. He just started sucking out of the blue. It's not like he got like total ancient. He just wasn't good.
Well, he also just couldn't stay healthy, and he had so many injuries that just kept compiling. So
right, so those are, you have to take that into consideration. Like, what if that does happen? Then you're stuck with a guy for 10 years. I would much rather pay more money for 5 years and run the risk of, you know, the guy staying healthy and paying him more of a premium for good years and knowing that he's gonna play for another contract afterwards. So there's an incentive there to do well and you know, you're not getting the Odell contract and then all of a sudden you hate water.
Well,
you know,
it's like it's squishy. It's squishy in my tummy.
Yeah.
I think so, that's what we're seeing with some of these opt-outs. You front load it, so you incentivize the player to opt out after X number of years because they're not going to be getting the same AAV.
Right. Like JD Martinez is going to opt out.
Yeah.
He's going to make a ton of money.
But the Red Sox maybe walk away from him and then they're going to get 2 years of MVP level numbers from him.
Right. I mean, no. Honestly, that deal that the Red Sox made, that Dombrowski made, was fucking genius. And I hate, as soon as I saw it and I saw the opt out, I'm like, God damn, that's gonna really work out well for them. That's, you know, these are going to be three painful years.
The only way that he does not opt out is if he suffers some catastrophic injury in the final season.
Right. Because the numbers, I mean, the I forget what it's, he's certainly not making, or he's making a ton.
It's front loaded. So, I mean, he's also a little bit older, right?
He's going to opt out. If he opts out, like if he has a year, like if he continues having years like this, if he continues having years like this and he gets to his opt out, based on what he's doing production wise, he's going to opt out because he's got another.
So he's got multiple opt outs.
Yeah.
So he can opt out
after 20, right?
After 2019.
Oh, 19, really?
After 2020 and after 2021. He can opt out every year. The first 3 years, he makes $23.75 million. And then in the last 2 years, he makes $19.3 million. So it goes down a little bit. But say he after next year, he puts up another monster year.
He's opting out. How old is he?
He banked close to $50 million. He can opt out again. He'll be 31.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, this is what LeBron, like Darrell Revis was doing this in the NFL. Like that guy was just a mercenary going from team to team, signing one-year deals. I mean, it's different in the NFL, but...
You're basically signing one-year deals in the NFL anyway.
Right, but he was really doing it. he was taking huge dollars for it. But that's how you make a lot of money. You got to be healthy. That's the thing. It's a gamble, but you're gambling on yourself. And to me, like a guy
he's not been the healthiest guy though. He's had some injury issues. Then that held up the contract. Reportedly, was his knee.
Who are you talking about?
Martinez.
Oh yeah, yeah. But he's healthy. That's all nonsense. Like that's all stuff that was in the paperwork of a physical or something, you know? Like it was a long and drawn out, and I think it felt like it was worth a bigger deal to all of us. We're like, yeah, it's hilarious because he's going to have knee problems, and then no, he's a freaking MVP.
Well, we didn't realize he was going to hit 340 with like 40 bombs. So
and he's not hurt at all. So, you know, it's just like, it's semantics at that point. I think it's just more of a negotiation ploy than it really was. The player was injured. So I don't know. Like if he does this right, he will make a ton of money and more than a guy that would sign a 10-year deal.
I think it's very based on, so it's a couple of factors with these things. It's based on the market at the time. The market last year dictated that he had to take that contract. I'm sure he would have preferred to take 5 guaranteed years at $24 million a year. That wasn't out there. So he had to take this instead. The market will dictate for Harper and Machado. And also the player will dictate for them. Do they want to bet on themselves or do they want to just have security?
Well, see, they're in a unique situation in the sense that if they were to go for like a 5-year deal or something like that, they're still going to be in their prime, you know, when they come back out. So they're really in the driver's seat in that sense. So in that way, so the gamble on themselves is
that's where
really,
you might get
really
a
pay off.
8 or 9 year deal with an opt out.
Oh yeah, at the 5-year mark or something.
At the
like 5-year
mark, opt out. So front loaded for $30 million for the first 5 years.
Yeah.
And then $22 million for the last 4 years. Opt out after 5. So it's up to the player. Do I want to stay? Do I want to go?
So I could see that if there was a longer deal and it was loaded like that. If it was loaded where it would essentially be a 5-year deal. I mean, it's kind of what I'm talking about. It's just a different way of putting it. And there was a player opt out. For at that point, it would be different. But the thing is, the team is still on the hook for whatever the if he's injured and does
he's
stay
injured.
In,
yep,
that's the rub.
It spreads out though the luxury tax number because at that point the way I understand it is you divide the total by the years and that's what your each year luxury tax number is.
Yeah, I mean it's a gamble both ways, you know. So a deal like that. There's a gamble for the player, not really, but kind of. If it's a player opt out, it's really he's in the driver's seat. But the team at that point is betting on that he's going to stay healthy. And if he does stay healthy, then they're going to get the 5 best years or 4 best years. And then if he's at that point where he's really playing well, then he's going to opt out and the team makes out. But on the other end, if he doesn't and he gets hurt or he's production wise goes down, then the team's going to be on the hook. So it's a big gamble for the team.
And you remember with Cano where a reason he did not take the Yankees offer was because he felt like it was an insult?
Oh, it was insulting, big time.
Right. So 7 years, $180 million was insulting.
I think it was 8 years, wasn't it? Wasn't it 8 years?
I don't remember if it was 7 or 8.
It was 7 or 8 years, but yeah, it was.
But he was insulted by his team, the Yankees, not offering him the most money and the most years.
Right.
This will not be the case with Machado and Harper, because I don't think the Nationals are going to be the top bidder for Harper. And Machado's now changed teams. The Orioles are obviously not going to be in it. And maybe the Dodgers will, but is he really going to feel offended by the Dodgers, the team he's only played for half a season?
Yeah. So when we were talking about the Bryce Harper thing, and we were talking about the other teams, I wasn't even thinking about the Nationals, but the Nationals have an opportunity to sign him. They absolutely do. And if you remember, it was the option. They gave him an option a couple years ago, and they also signed his brother. Like, they did a couple things that were like glad handing, like
tried to lure him in.
Yeah. And I think a couple years ago when he signed this option, or they extended him for, I forget the exact situation, but I was like, oh, this feels like hey, we're going to help you out now. We're going to do this. We don't have to, but we're going to do it. Remember this. And you know, the owners of the Nationals are some of the richest owners in baseball. Like, they have more money than the majority of owners. They're very, very well off and doing very well. They could offer him a shit ton of money. They could absolutely do it. If they wanted to keep him, they could keep him. So I do think that's probably it's going to be one of the big storylines. Does he stay there? Because they can give him the money. It's the matter of, do they want to give him the money?
And that's clearly his team. So if you're talking about him being the guy, his team. He's the guy there.
Absolutely. That's his team. He also feels like the kind of guy that would want to stay with one team. I could see him doing that. Like, he wants to be remembered. I think his legacy is important to him. And if you stay with the one team, the Nationals, you know, being like, he would be the guy. And really, in the franchise Mr. history, Nationals. He would be the guy. Yeah.
What do you think is more important to him, though? That and his legacy, or how much money he makes?
Well, I mean, I think it'll be right there. They would have to pony up for sure.
Do they have to be the top bidder?
I think it has to be very close. I think I don't think he's going to scratch over a couple million, though. You know what I mean? Like, if it was a significant gap, then
at that point, what does it matter?
Yeah. Exactly. So you're making, if you bring Bryce Harper back as the Nationals, you know, you're bringing back your guy. You're signing your guy. To me, that's also, you know, a good move for the Nationals long term, because you know you're going to be bringing him back for Ring of Honor stuff or what, Hall of Fame. Like, there's a million things that you could do with Bryce Harper then for the rest of his life, and you're going to be banking off of Bryce Harper forever. You know,
and they're still trying to win in the next couple of years with Scherzer and Strasburg, if he can ever be healthy. So
he won't be.
Okay, so with Scherzer, who's maybe the second best pitcher in baseball right now, he's not going to be that forever. So
yeah, and they have Soto in left field. They have Trey Turner and shortstop. They have young pieces there that could do. I mean, they have young pieces.
And Harper's not old, no, as we just said.
And Harper's not old, so there's places that they can build around. It's not like they had a bad year. There's no doubt about it. But they have the ability, and again, they have money. They could spend. There's no doubt.
All right, we're going to get into mailbag questions. Just quickly, I want to mention, for everybody out there listening who has not rated and reviewed the podcast, go and do that right now. So, Scott, remember when we scalded listeners?
Yeah.
You scalded them. I scalded them. It worked. We got a couple of reviews. Somebody actually said, I'm only leaving this review because I got yelled at by Scott and Andrew. It was still 5 stars. That's okay. It's fine in my book. So if anyone out there listening has not given us a rating and review yet, what the hell are you waiting for?
Like, there are people that
enjoy the podcast. Go.
There are people that have mentioned that, like, I've been listening to you guys for 2 years and I'm just now leaving this. Well, there's really no excuse for that, honestly. We you know, we record this show every single week. And during this season, twice a week. Just hook us up.
And every day after a postseason game. And had the Yankees been in the World Series and played 18 innings, you and I would have been there at 6 o'clock in the morning recording a podcast out of our freaking minds.
Hating my life. Hating my life. I would have been ruined for a week. But I wouldn't have had time because there would have been a game the next day.
This season is that we didn't have to do that. So again, guys, it really does help us out. We are making a joke of it, but it's in all sincerity, it helps us out a ton for visibility, for all that stuff. People who are looking for new podcasts to listen to, if they see 5-star ratings and reviews, they are going to listen. That allows us to create more shows and all that good stuff. So go ahead, give us a rating and review. Also, submit mailbag questions. We're going to be doing mailbags each week or most weeks throughout the off season. Go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can send us a tweet at Yankees Podcast and join the Facebook group. Post your questions there. The Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook. First up, Patrick Mellett at Mellett_Patrick on Twitter. Do you think moving Gary to first base would be a good move for him long term? I think it could help extend his career by not having thousands of reps behind home plate. Keeping him healthy should be important with how good he is with the bat. Also solves our long-term first base problem. What are your thoughts on Sanchez as the first base savior?
No, thank you. This is something that we've definitely gone down this rabbit hole before.
But let me say,
yeah,
we didn't do it recently. We did it last year when Gary Sanchez had still a monster year behind the plate. He didn't have a monster year behind the plate this year. He was a problem behind the plate this year.
You're talking about defensively. So
and offensively.
And offensively, yeah. So there's the rub. I mean, the rub is that he's usually, I can't even say this anymore. He's supposed to be a, you know, plus-plus offensive catcher. And when you have offense coming from the catcher position like that, it's something that you don't see very often, and it becomes a premium. If you move that same offense to first base, well, then it becomes, you know, a little bit more standardized because you're seeing that level of production from first baseman across the league. So his value, if you're talking about offense and correlating a position to it, is certainly behind the plate, because that means you can have another first baseman that's theoretically productive as a first baseman with power and all these things. Plus, you know, I'm just off of it now, because if he can't learn a position, he can't do well a position that he's been playing his entire life, I just don't have confidence in him going into playing a new one and doing well with that. So it'll just be another complaint area of him going over there and playing bad defense at first base.
He's 25. Yeah. I was trying to think of comps catcher-wise who was moved to first base to save their careers, and Mauer came up, and he was 31 when he went over to first base.
And that was more based on injury. Like, that was him not staying
healthy.
Also,
I think the Twins felt, we signed this guy for a long-term deal, 8 years. We want him to be as productive with the bat as long as he can. And the funny thing is, he went to first base and he wasn't the same player offensively. So they had kind of like a pretty good hitter playing first base when they had a really good hitter catching. Well, so I mean, it really didn't work out well at all for the Twins. He played first base full-time in 2014. That was his age 31 season. You still have Gary Sanchez at 25 years old. Yeah. He's still in his athletic, in quotes, his athletic prime.
Right. No, I mean, I want Gary Sanchez to improve behind the plate, because we've seen when he can play well. And honestly, by watching some of these catchers in the postseason, it kind of makes me feel a little bit better, honestly, when I look at the defense.
Oh, Grandal has been horrible.
Grandal's been really, really, really bad. But, you know, I've said this before. I think that Gary Sanchez can absolutely fix a lot of these things, and it takes an offseason to do it. So I do hope that he's working his ass off in the offseason and is going to clean up a lot of these things. But if the guy's hitting like he can hit, and you're seeing some of the, you're still seeing some of these pass balls, but you're also seeing the cannon of an arm, there's going to be a give and take. And I will complain about it every single time because it drives me nuts. But I understand that there's a give and take. I'll still complain, but I understand that there's a give and take. And I know where his value is, and it's at catcher.
Cashman was on with Michael Kay, and he said, "We know what he's," referring to Sanchez, "capable of doing. And I'm already getting phone calls, to be honest, from clubs trying to knock on our door to see if he's available. And he's not. He will be our catcher." So some sneaky, sneaky GMs are calling up Brian Cashman saying, "Hey, you want to sell low on your all-star catcher?"
Yeah, he's like, "That's my move. What are you doing here? You cannot pull my move.
You're pulling the 'it's not you, it's me' move?"
Yeah, yeah. You don't stop short with me. This is not happening. No, Brian Cashman understands that. He could smell it a mile away. Oh, why is Billy... Get Billy off the phone. Just hang up on him. Tell him not even to call me again until the trade deadline. But
every team in Major League Baseball would love to take Gary Sanchez problem off of the Yankees and Brian Cashman's hands.
Absolutely. I mean, look, he had a horrible year. There is no way to sugarcoat it. He knows it. Everybody knows it. So all he now he understands that hopefully he could develop a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. You know, it's Gary Sanchez versus the haters, and he's going to come out and prove everybody wrong and prove that he is the guy that we all thought he was going to be. So I still believe that that's going to happen. I do believe he's going to be a productive player for the Yankees for a long time, and the offense is going to come back. Because to me, that's one of the biggest thing. Like, that offense has to come back for him to have the value. You know, if we're just looking at him as a catcher with a very mediocre offense, then we got problems. But if the bat can come back, and even in the first half, like, you know, all the traditional numbers we saw were not good. The eye, when you look at the back of his bat, his baseball card didn't look good, but he was productive. The power was there, and he was productive. He was driving in runs, and he was doing things that he needed to do. And he was getting a bit unlucky because he was hitting balls hard just at people.
How much do you think his struggles offensively affected him defensively, and vice versa?
It's hard to say. I think the frustration, definitely, he gets frustrated.
I was just going to say, he is a type of guy who lets frustration get to him, whereas yes. Aaron Judge won't let frustration get to him.
Right. It looks like he does, for sure. I mean, and by the way he produced in after situations that were stressful, it alluded to the fact that it did bother him, and he took it behind the plate if he was struggling at the plate, or he took it, to the plate if he was struggling defensively. So yeah, I think it does affect him. And I think that goes to his, you know, maturity as a player. I think that's one of the areas that he's got to improve on. He's got to improve on staying in that baseline and just staying in the moment and just, you know, being him, being El Gary.
And it snowballed on him. He hit 186. Batting average doesn't matter, but it matters when you're hitting 186.
Yeah. It matters right, when it's right? convenient. Right.
No, it's not convenient, but that sticks out like a sore thumb. Like, yeah. He hit 186. He's not a 186 hitter. I'm sure every day he looked up the scoreboard and saw 186 and said, what the hell?
Do the baseball cards have different stats on the back now today? I haven't looked at a baseball card.
WRC plus and war.
They do.
And no, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I'm wondering
like
if
maybe
they do.
when Kemp and my future son take over this podcast in 20 years, they will not even know what batting average is. Right. They'll say, our dads used to talk about batting average. Now,
old
it's
bastards.
All about VORP. Remember VORP?
Yeah, it'll be B-whips. B-whips will be a real thing.
Hey, good.
That'll be my legacy. I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. If B-whips is my legacy, I'm good with that.
Can we get the stat nerds on that, please?
Yeah. Seriously, can they do something that is productive for us? Oh, by the way, I had a question for you. You brought up Joe Mauer. Are you now kind of a closet Twins fan?
Oh, because of Rocco Baldelli?
Baldelli, yeah. You're a Rhode Island guy.
I never was a Twins hater, considering the Yankees treated them like little brother their entire my entire life. So, yeah, go Twins.
Didn't he say something about sabermetrics? He said something about that the numbers are killing the game. He said it in one of his interviews.
I didn't hear that. Rocco did. Well, yeah. I mean Kevin Cash and the Rays bullpenning single handedly killed the game this year. So,
yep, he's apparently not a fan.
A lot of the Rays coaching staff got some interest from teams this year because they saw
it's like
the
a
Rays
virus. They're
going to
spread. Yeah, all the Joe Madden guys and the Kevin Cash guys now are going to explode all over the league, and it's just going to be a freaking league full of bullpenning, bullshit, shifting, and all this other nonsense. It's a virus, and it's spreading.
Rocco Baldelli, I think, might be... Or no, you know, actually, Joe Madden's from Rhode Island as well?
Well, there you go. You got two of them.
And so is Paul Konerko.
You want to keep going? We could list the Rhode Island Hall of Fame here.
Yeah, I think Joe Madden was born in he's born in Pennsylvania, but there was something about he spent some time as a kid in Rhode Island. But Konerko and Baldelli from Rhode Island. Okay. All right, let's move on. What's the next question?
Next one is from Esteban Ortiz. He's at eortiz06. Not saying I want this to happen, but let's say Yankees get Machado. I would assume it would be in the third base position. Do you see them trying Andujar at first base, maybe outfield? Or would he have to be traded?
So that's if they sign Machado, I'm only okay with it if it's third base. If you want to say shortstop until Didi comes back, I could live with it, but I still rather him be full-time third baseman because that's where he's strongest.
Right. No, I agree with that. I would absolutely want him to be the third baseman, certainly because Didi. But I understand what kind of a year it is for next year for Didi. It's of the utmost importance for the Yankees and for especially for Didi to get back as early as he possibly can because it is an important year for his contract. So he needs to be there and he needs to be productive. But yeah, Andujar is a much better third baseman than he is a shortstop. And
Machado.
And that's where you want the guy to be long term. I don't know. I don't want to move him around a ton. But again, if there's an injury and you're going to play him there for a short time, him and Glaber maybe going back and forth, I'd be fine with that.
And if you're paying a guy $30 million plus a year, you don't want him to be sucking defensively.
Right. And you know, when you're looking at Andujar, then if Machado, let's just assume Machado's signed and let's assume he's playing third base. Andujar then is definitely a piece that Cashman could move. I mean, it's there. It could happen. But I do think that he could go over and play first base. He's obviously a valuable bat. So, and I know you don't want to, you know, fill the DH position with a young guy and a guy that's going to be there all the time. But it's an option to, if you want to keep him, if you don't get the value for him, it's certainly an option to keep him on the team.
I think you'd see him getting time at first base.
I think that would be the logical
start working on first base as soon as Machado signs on the dotted line, and then we'd see it in spring training. I'm sure it'd be ugly at first, but if he's hitting, you could live with it at first base, just like you lived with it at third base, and then hopefully he can progress. At least he doesn't have to throw at first base as much, right? Because that was the biggest issue, was his throwing. He took forever to throw the damn ball, and he didn't have much range, but it's not as much of a factor at first base as it is at third base.
Yeah, if he's at first base, then the left fielder just understands that he's backing up second baseman, high alert.
On double play balls?
Yeah, on double play balls.
Anything like Giambi couldn't throw either, and he was able to. He could pick it, though, at first base.
He could.
Giambi could catch the short hop, just if he had to throw to second base, it looked like he was a girl throwing.
Strong mustache.
Next question is from Hernan B. Canton at Hernan_Barkello.
Actually, hold on. Before we read this one, I just thought of something. I'll forget it if I don't say it. The outfield was mentioned in that too. Do you think there's any possibility of an Andujar to the outfield? They did it. I'm trying to think
Chuck
of another
Knobloch.
Guy.
And yes. Soriano.
Yes. Well Soriano did it with the terrible Nationals. Everywhere. But Ryan Braun most recently. Ryan Braun went from third base to left field. It's another guy that's done it before. But third baseman has definitely gone to the outfield.
I just mentioned him 20 minutes ago. Third baseman for the Cubs.
Chris Bryant
played third base, played left field in his rookie season.
Yep. Ian Desmond has gone from the outfield play. Yeah, I think he's playing mostly left field now, or the outfield of Colorado.
Do I think that Andujar could play left field? Yes, but I think that the Yankees would rather have other options in left field that they would go with over Andujar.
Maybe they don't. That's an interesting move, honestly, because if they're not signing Gardner and they're trying to bring in, they need a left fielder, whether it's Frazier or not, then, you know, if Miggy's an option, if that's a thing, like, I think that absolutely could be in play. I don't think it's out of the question to move him to a left field spot.
Over under on outfield assists if he plays left field, 0.5.
in a year?
Yeah.
I'll go over. Just cause
over because everybody will run on him.
Yeah, he'll have a lot of opportunities.
He'll get a couple lucky bounces. All right, the next question was from @Hernan_Barkello on Twitter. Do you see any team maybe interested in Ellsbury this offseason? Is there a slim chance the Yankees could offload his contract? Do you want to do the honors?
This is a prayer question. No, there's zero chance. Zero chance.
It's negative infinity chance.
It's not happening.
What's the next question?
Next one is from TWalt2468. Why aren't the Yankees using Stanton as a regular left fielder? He seems too young and expensive to already be a DH. He should work on left field the offseason and in spring training. This honestly is another it's there. I mean, it's absolutely there. It's something that could be done, especially, like, theoretically, think about this. If they were to sign Machado and Andujar wasn't working well at first base, and he's still on the team, and he's DHing. You could absolutely put Stanton in left field.
Yeah,
you
and
could,
Stanton
you could
was
switch people around.
He was adequate in left field. I don't think they were devastated by Stanton's inability to play left field. I think he was pretty average, which is fine.
Yeah, and I think he'll only get better. I mean, I think left field, especially at Yankee Stadium, is a hard task. You have to get used to the room out there. There's just so much of it that you definitely have to get used to it. And you know, the longer you're there, obviously, look at Gardner. It's like his backyard now. He knows every bit of the land. He knows the bounces. He knows all these things. But yeah, it's something to get used to. And I really do think next year we're going to see a lot of rotation in the outfield anyway.
We can have that. Yep. Because we're going to see
guys at DH and you know, Stanton's going to play right field and Stanton's probably going to play left field. And who the hell knows is going to be playing left field. If it is Frazier, they're not going to want him to be out there every single day. There's going to be some movement in the outfield. So I do think he's going to play left field a good amount.
Maybe Frazier, instead of being the starting left fielder, is the fourth outfielder that plays left and right pretty frequently.
Yeah. I mean, that absolutely could happen. If you remember when Hicks was the fourth outfielder, you know, he was playing 5 out of 7. Like if you played 7 games in a week, the fourth outfielder is getting run like 5 out of 7.
Here's a problem though, because if they don't re-sign Gardner, which both of us in our offseason plans didn't want, and Ellsbury is MIA, which is a complete possibility, who's the backup center fielder?
It depends on who you, I mean, there could be a new signing. It's not like everybody's on this team right now.
Oh, of course there'd be a new signing, but Hicks also, it hasn't been the most durable guy.
Right. Frazier has played center.
They don't want him in center field. Didn't Boone have a comment early in the year about him in center field? It's not something they want to do.
I don't remember, but I know that they played him in Scranton center field, you know, often. He played center field a couple times. He has the ability to do it. He's athletic enough for sure. So, I mean, it could be something they work around. But again, like if that doesn't happen, they're going to most likely go out and get somebody. And maybe Judge goes to center field.
Billy Beane willing to give up Dustin Fowler?
Only if the price is right. Only if the price is right. Will
he take a pitcher that got pulled from the rotation in August?
I mean, he was just more valuable in the bullpen. I wouldn't say pulled from the rotation.
Right.
Just more valuable in the bullpen.
All right, next question is from Greg B. at GBout35 on Twitter. Hypothetically speaking here, but let's say David Price closes out the World Series for Boston with a gem. So overall, you could say he had a pretty good season and he got the bad playoff starter monkey off of his back. If he opts out, does Cashman make a competitive offer to him?
No. This cannot happen. This certainly cannot happen.
Well, he already said he didn't want to come to the Yankees because he didn't want to shave his beard.
Fine.
Remember he said that when he was a free agent the first time?
It's ringing a bell. You cannot bring in a guy like David. You can't bring in David Price. Not a guy like David Price. You cannot
bring in David Price.
You cannot do that. You just cannot do that. So, no. And there's no... I really don't think there's any chance that he opts out.
Especially now he's going to be beloved in Boston. He did close out the ALCS. And I don't know what he's going to do tonight. But even if he pitches mediocre and even if he just loses, the Red Sox are probably still going to win the World Series in 6 or 7. So, whatever. He's fine.
Yeah, he's been telling, you know, he's been telling Cora even after he pitched the other day, like that he's ready anytime. Like all these guys are saying they're good. Like Evaldi threw, how many, would he throw 6 innings in that long one? He apparently goes the next day, he's like, I'm good.
Evaldi's going to be the game 7 starter if it gets there?
Yeah, and he'll dominate. That's what will happen. You know that.
Because he's throwing 97 mile an hour cutters.
You want to know what I think is going to happen? This is what I think is going to happen. In 10 years, we're going to find out that all these guys with Tommy John surgery had something inserted into their arm. Like seriously, like rookie of the year, there's like a band or of some sort.
Well, he's had multiple arm. Tommy John.
He's
surgeries.
Had two. He's got a bionic arm now.
And didn't he
this
pull,
is why I want. This is why I want
to
blow
out his UCL or not the UCL. Is that in the elbow? I don't even know. Didn't he blow out some elbow ligament too when he was in high school? Didn't have surgery, but sort of recovered from it.
I don't know.
He's had like two and a half.
He had Tommy John surgery, I think, when he was a junior in high school. I think he had it.
He had something when he was with the Marlins too.
I don't know, but he because he got traded to the Yankees and he was all right. Maybe there was the the Tanaka tear, you know, that it's like there, but it's not.
Partial UCL tear.
Yeah, apparently that everybody has. And I guarantee if they were to do that, if they were to go and give an MRI on every Major League Baseball player, you'd see that same tear of like 40% of the bigs, maybe even more than that.
You know, I'm surprised.
I guarantee it's very common.
How come we never hear about quarterbacks having Tommy John surgery?
Because they don't throw it. They don't throw as much, and it's not as like high effort.
I think they throw as much, but it's not as high effort.
I don't know if they throw as much. How many? No, because they're
there's
in
no
a game,
days. They practice in every day.
In a game, I understand that, but in a game, they're throwing what 50 at most passes. Like that's a lot. 30 is probably more close to average.
Yeah,
and some of them are there. None of them are fastballs. Maybe a few of them. I don't know.
It depends.
It's just not as much stress.
All right, stupid comment by me. Let's move on.
But yeah, so that's what my conspiracy theory is, that there's something in the arms.
Yeah, they're
it's like a corked bat. It's
doing
a corked
some
bat.
Gene splicing or whatever in these elbows.
Yeah, yeah, something's going on.
All these. Yeah,
yeah. There's just too many people getting Tommy John now. Somebody knows something.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's going to be the new Balca? Will be Dr. James Andrews.
And Nivaldi will be the poster boy like Barry Bonds was.
I kind of love this. I actually think this is really going to happen.
What's the next question?
Next one is from Joe. He's at Joseph_P7. Can we address the fact that Chapman was scarily erratic most of the season? He was. He was hurt though. I think that we had, you know, they talked about the tendonitis in the knee for a long time.
Since June.
He was talking about it even before that. It was a known thing that he had tendonitis, but it became an issue. It seemed like that was affecting him at that point. So, you know, I don't think he was right all year, and this is troubling because I don't think he's, I think this is going to happen often. I think we're going to see knee issues with him for the rest of his contract.
He was so,
he ended the season pretty well though.
He did. He had the bad stretch when he came back from the injury, yeah, and he didn't look right. And I feel like they never got him into a rhythm.
Right.
One thing about Chapman was if he didn't pitch for 4 or 5 days, he was terrible. And I feel he kept coming and having these long rests.
But they were also dictated by the games. I mean, there were just so many weird games.
I know it's a fine line you play. Do I get my closer into a situation to get him regular rest, or do I save him for the next day because it's a 5-run lead and I don't want to burn my closer? I understand that dilemma, but
don't do it all in one game. Don't do them all. Just so you know, don't do it all in one game. Don't get everybody prepped in one game, please.
What game was that? Wasn't that a Red Sox game? And then it didn't screw him the next day.
Yeah, oh yeah, it screwed him for sure. I think it was the Red Sox series where he was just trying to get people work and then he needed them and nobody was available.
Chapman this year, 51 and a third innings, 33 walks. That's 5.3 walks per 9 innings. That's the highest total he's had since 2011, which was his second major league season.
That's an insane amount of walks for a reliever. It really is. It's the fact that this guy got the biggest contract for a reliever a closer is insane. Because when you run those numbers, like that guy's not a reliever, that guy's a failed starter.
Do you know what Betances had last year? Per nine innings, 6.6.
Oh my god, really? Jeez, last year?
Yeah.
Holy
2017
shit.
Betances.
Okay, I believe that.
Yeah, he had 44 walks in 59 innings, which is 6.6. And Chapman has been pretty good, except this year. I mean, so.
The knee is worrisome though, because when you have tendonitis like that, it's something that's going to linger. It's going to be there. It's not something you can absolutely like go in and cure, right? It's going to be as you get older, as the knee weakens, the cartilage will, you know, go away or weaken or whatever it does, you know, unless you do the Kobe Bryant plasma spinning thing in Germany and, you know, it all of a sudden regenerates. I don't know how that works, but if you could do that, you should do that.
It was a rest thing, right? It was a rest and a pain tolerance thing. So
yes,
what's going to prevent it from coming back in May or June next year?
German knee spinning.
Other than German knee spinning, what?
Nothing.
Is prevent
nothing.
It?
This is something that's his body now. Yeah, it's tendonitis doesn't go away like that. You have to deal with it. It's just something you deal with. As a matter of like, you know, I don't know how. He can he can learn to manage it with his mechanics. I think that's the next step for him as he's getting older. He's going to have to understand that this tendonitis is there. And when I feel it, how do I, you know, turn it off and make sure that my mechanics don't get out of whack? Because that's what we see. We see the release point. We see, you know, whatever the, whether he's landing in a different spot or whatever it is, he can't find the mitt. Throwing the fastball, and then all of a sudden he's throwing this slider. Secondary slider.
The slider this
and gets
year
crushed.
Was better than it was in previous years, so maybe that pitch will continue to develop.
Yes, it and it should, but the thing is it can't be alone. It can't be on an island.
Pitch. It's never also going to be a Dylan Betances slider.
No, but it certainly can't be on an island. Even Betances can't be on an island. He's got to have both pitches. Well, both of those guys work off of each other. It's Mariano Rivera. But they work off of each other. Those pitches work off of each other. So they're, you know, the Betances, that curveball is devastating. And then you have Chapman, who's trying to, you know, get the slider, and it has gotten better, there's no doubt. But when it's your primary pitch, it's not that good. It's not like it's a tremendous slider if you're talking about guys who have the best sliders. It's a very good slider working off that fastball. It's very good. And it works in tandem. But if you know that he can't throw the fastball for a strike and you're just looking for the slider, they're going to tee off.
The Yankees actually have some work to do in that bullpen. We each had some bullpen moves this offseason, but they're going to need to either acquire via trade or free agency one or two more relievers.
Yeah, for sure. It's not as there's question marks definitely with Chapman now, I think is him being healthy really all season is a question mark. You know, which Betances is going to show up. Hopefully those mechanics changes is something that he can carry on long term and just, you know, and roll that into 2019 because he was so good at the end of the last year. But yeah, you can't rely on Canely any longer. You just can't rely on that. If he's there, then that's gravy. Obviously with D-Rob, they have a decision to make there. And then, you know, I think you can rely on Chad Green. I think he's been a dependable bullpen guy that's been effective. Well, not as effective as last year, but still a very effective guy out there. But yeah, they're going to have to fill a couple spots.
All right, last question is from Vinny Ayula. Who is going to have the biggest impact next year, Sheffield, Herman, or Loaisiga? This is a tough question considering like there's so many variables here. And everyone wants it to be Sheffield. But who do you think could because Herman and Loaisiga both threw a lot of innings for the Yankees this year. And I saw a lot out of Loaisiga that I liked. I saw a lot out of Herman that I liked. We were big Herman guys, if you remember. We were diving into those strikeout and swing and miss percentages.
Yeah, well, they were impressive. There, I mean, when you look at the numbers on him and the fact that, you know, he was missing as many bats as he did, it's just the mistakes would hurt him. Like he would make too many mistakes at bad times and he would get hurt. But when he was on, I mean, he was definitely one of the bigger swing and miss guys in the league. I mean, in the league, he had numbers that were impressive. So it's kind of puzzling when you see, you know, how badly he would struggle with inconsistency all the time, because when he was good, he was really good. Sheffield's got work to do, I think, still with his command. I think that's a big deal. I really don't see him, you know, breaking camp as the fifth starter. I know a lot of people want that.
Change in the spring training. I think sure. He is going to be in the fifth starter competition. So I think they'll pick the guy who's pitching best.
Yeah. If we're talking about the biggest impact next year, if I were to gamble on one of these guys, I would actually say Herman. I think that I'm not as high on Sheffield, honestly, as a lot of people are. And, you know, whether I just by looking at him and just the way that he throws, I'm just not as high on him for whatever reason. Herman, I think, can play long term. He's got to clean up some of his stuff. And Loaisiga, I think they want to start in the minors. And we'll see how he develops. But I think he's a little bit further away.
Because Loaisiga had really good control and walk numbers in the minors, I could actually see him playing in the bullpen this year.
Yeah, that could it could be like a Chad Green thing, right?
Yeah.
We could see him going in there. I could see that. But Herman, to me, Herman has, he's very close. You know, it feels like he's very close.
Because we saw flashes of it multiple times last year.
And I've seen it in the major leagues. And I mean, granted, I haven't seen it from Sheffield, but Sheffield really does have work to do with his command, because his command is not good.
Yeah. Swing and misses is not flukes.
Right. Exactly. And we saw what happened with Chance Adams. Chance Adams couldn't fix the command issues, and now he's not even talked about. Like, he came up when the rosters expanded at some point, and you know, he pitched a courageous game in Fenway Park.
Like, but that was actually, he got a spot start in that.
Yeah.
That
he was in a very tough situation.
But he got a start in that August weekend, that destruction of a weekend. He got that Saturday game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
he
that's
pitched
right.
Pitched like five solid innings.
Yeah.
But that was before the rosters expanded. Then he came up again, and who the hell knows?
But when you're talking about like prospects and guys that who, you know, the club is big on, like, certainly I don't think they're as big on Chance Adams as they were last year.
Oh, hell no.
Because
they still are. Sheffield's still on the prospect boards. So,
oh, for sure.
If they're not high on him internally, I think you could get somebody to, you could use him as a trade asset, where I don't think Chance Adams is much of a trade asset at this point.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. And so to that extent, like, he absolutely is high on their list. I mean, he's their number one prospect at this point. Like, he's got to fix the command issues. You can't come to the big leagues with command issues like that. You just can't. You gotta control the strike zone.
Going back to the bullpen, you know who we forgot about and who will be healthy again this year is Ben Heller. He could play in the bullpen.
Yeah, will he? He had Tommy John surgery in the middle of the year.
He missed not in the middle of the year. He missed all of last season. I think he got hurt in spring training.
Was it? I thought it was like May or June. Was it earlier than that?
Googling Ben Heller surgery right now. Okay, but April 7th.
Okay, it was earlier than I remembered. It was the end of the season, though. So the season had just begun.
Yep.
He'll be close to coming back, if maybe.
But he was borderline big league bullpen last
year.
Yeah.
Oh, his stuff is really good.
So he could, if he's healthy, play in the bullpen.
Yeah, it seems like that sounds like a little early, though.
Okay, maybe not somebody in April, but what about June?
Yeah, no,
what
end of the
May
year.
Or June?
No, absolutely. He could be a guy that we could see. You know, if everybody stays, Domingo Germán could be a guy that they look at for the bullpen too. I mean, he's another guy who throws, you know, triple digits that has the possibility to be an effective bullpen guy too. So there's guys that can be, I think, incorporated from within for sure. But we'll see what they do on the trade market. But of this, I don't know, Sheffield, man. I'm just, for whatever reason, I'm a little wary of him.
Well, way to end the podcast with a bummer.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they traded him. To tell you the truth,
I wouldn't be surprised if they trade him or Andujar.
Yeah,
I would. And I think if they trade Andujar, then Machado's a Yankee.
That's the only way.
That's the only way, yeah.
I think that's the only way. But I don't think
we also got a question, which I didn't do, about what is Clint Frazier's future, and I don't see his future being traded this offseason because he has no value.
I wouldn't say he has no value, but his value is certainly down.
I would not trade him now because you're not going to get the value that you should for him.
Right, that's correct. You're definitely not. There's no doubt about it. Floreal, you could say the same thing because he's coming off of an injury. You know, he's playing in Arizona currently, that's something. So he's healthy.
If you want to wait and see on him, though, I'm fine with that. Like, just let him progress.
At the same time, I don't think anybody's untouchable right now. I really don't. I'm getting that sense that
Ninja
nobody's
Brian
untouchable.
Cashman is going to strike.
I just feel like he. This
nobody
team is
in the minors
clearly ready
are untouchable.
To win.
There's major league players who are.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. In the minors, there's this team is ready to go, and there are other teams around right now that are. Like very, very top heavy with talent, and they have to compete. And I think Cashman's going to look around. He identifies that, and he's gonna. There's going to be a move. Because could you think about how devastating it would be if they had this core and you know we're waiting and waiting, and then just you know never in a season they would put it together, and they had the opportunity to strike when you know it felt like the team was ready. I don't know. I feel like he's gonna make a move.
Yeah, that's what he usually does. So. I expect the unexpected with him.
No
All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you to everybody who submitted mailbag questions. Again, go to bronxpinstripes.com. Email us your questions. Scott, any last words?
No, I don't have any last words. There's zero last words coming from me. I really, really hope that when you guys are listening to this, there is still hope for the Dodgers to win the World Series. That's the only that's my only hope going into this.
So you did have last words.
Those are my last words.
All right.
And these are my last words.
Talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.